He only has eyes for Miss Steele, and I give him a withering look that sends him in retreat from the opulent dining room. An older waiter seats Anna and drapes a napkin on her lap. "I've ordered already. I hope you don't mind."
"No, that's fine,"
she says with a gracious nod. "It's good to know that you can be amenable," I smirk. "Now where were we?"
"The nitty-gritty,"
she says, focused on the task at hand, but then she takes a large gulp of wine and her cheeks color. She must be looking for courage. I'll have to watch how much she's drinking because she's driving. She could always spend the night here. Then I could peel her out of that enticing dress. Regaining my focus, I return to business. Anna's issues. From the inside pocket of my jacket, I retrieve her email. She squares her shoulders once more and gives me an expectant look, and I have to hide my amusement. "Clause 2. Agreed. This is for the benefit of us both. I shall redraft." She takes another sip. "My sexual health? Well, all of my previous partners have had blood tests, and I have regular tests every 6 months for all the health risks you mention. All my recent tests are clear. I have never taken drugs. In fact, I'm vehemently anti-drug. I have a strict no-tolerance policy with regards to drugs for all my employees, and I insist on random drug testing. In fact, one of the people I fired today failed his drug test." She's shocked, but I plow on. "I've never had any blood transfusions. Does that answer your question?" She nods. "Your next point I mentioned earlier. You can walk away any time, Anastasia. I won't stop you. If you go, however, that's it. Just so you know. No second chances ever."
"Okay,"
she replies, though she doesn't sound certain. We both fall silent as the waiter enters with our appetizers. For a moment, I wonder if I should have held this meeting at my office, then dismiss the thought as ridiculous. Only fools mix business with pleasure. I've kept my work and private life separate. It's one of my golden rules. And the only exception to that is my relationship with Elena. But then she helped me start my business. "I hope you like oysters," I remark to Anna as the waiter leaves.
"I've never had one."
"Really? Well, all you do is tip and swallow. I think you can manage that." I stare pointedly at her mouth, remembering how well she can swallow. On cue, she blushes, and I squeeze lemon juice on the shellfish and tip it into my mouth. Delicious. Tastes of the sea. I grin as she watches me, fascinated. "Go on," I encourage her, knowing that she's not one to back down from a challenge.
"So I don't chew it?"
"No, Anastasia, you don't." And I try not to think about her teeth toying with my favorite part of my anatomy. She presses them into her bottom lip, leaving little indentation marks. "Damn." The sight stirs my body and I shift in my chair. She reaches for an oyster, squeezes the lemon, holds back her head, and opens wide. As she tips the oyster into her mouth, my body hardens.
"Well?"
I ask, and I sound a little hoarse.
"I'll have another,"
she says with wry humor. "Good girl." She asks me if I've chosen oysters deliberately, knowing their reputed aphrodisiac qualities. I surprise her when I tell her they were simply at the top of the menu. "I don't need an aphrodisiac near you." "Yeah, I could fuck you right now." "Behave, Gray. Get this negotiation back on track." So where were we? I return to her email and concentrate on her outstanding issues. Clause 9. "Obey me in all things." "Yes, I want you to do that." This is important to me. I need to know she's safe and will do anything for me. "I need you to do that. Think of it as role play, Anastasia."
"But I'm worried you'll hurt me."
"Hurt you how?"
"Physically.
Do you really think I would do that? Go beyond any limit you can't take?
You've said you've hurt someone before.
Yes, I have. It was a long time ago.
How did you hurt her?
I suspended her from my playroom ceiling. In fact, that's one of your questions. Suspension. That's what the carabiners are for in the playroom. Rope play. One of the ropes was tied too tightly. Appalled, she holds up her hand in a plea for me to stop. Too much information.
I don't need to know anymore.
So you won't suspend me then? She asks. Not if you really don't want to. You can make that a hard limit.
Okay.
She exhales, relieved. Move on, Gray. So, obeying, do you think you can manage that? She stares at me with those eyes that see through to my dark soul, and I don't know what she's going to say. Shit, this could be the end.
I could try,
she says, her voice low. It's my turn to exhale. I'm still in the game. Good. Now term, clause 11. 1 month instead of 3 is no time at all, especially if you want a weekend away from me each month. We'll get nowhere in that time. She needs training, and I can't stay away from her for any length of time. I tell her as much. Maybe we can compromise, as she suggested. How about 1 day over 1 weekend per month you get to yourself? But I get a midweek night that week. I watch her weighing the possibility.
Okay,
she says eventually, her expression serious. Good. And please, let's try it for 3 months. If it's not for you, then you can walk away any time.
3 months,
she says. Is she agreeing? I'll take it as a yes. Right, here goes. The ownership thing, that's just terminology, and goes back to the principle of obeying. It's to get you into the right frame of mind, to understand where I'm coming from. And I want you to know that as soon as you cross my threshold as my submissive, I will do what I like to you. You have to accept that, and willingly. That's why you have to trust me. I will fuck you, anytime, any way I want, anywhere I want. I will discipline you, because you will screw up. I will train you to please me. But I know you've not done this before. Initially, we'll take it slowly, and I will help you. We'll build up to various scenarios. I want you to trust me, but I know I have to earn your trust, and I will. The or otherwise. Again, it's to help you get into the mindset. It means anything goes. Some speech, Gray. She sits back, overwhelmed, I think. Still with me? I ask gently. The waiter sneaks into the room, and with a nod I give him permission to clear our table. Would you like some more wine? I ask her.
I have to drive.
Good answer. Some water, then. She nods. Still or sparkling?
Sparkling, please.
The waiter leaves with our plates. You're very quiet, I whisper. She's barely said a word.
You're very verbose,
she shoots straight back at me. Fair point, Miss Steele. Now for the next item on her list of issues, clause 15. I take a deep breath. Discipline. There's a very fine line between pleasure and pain, Anastasia. They are two sides of the same coin, one not existing without the other. I can show you how pleasurable pain can be. You don't believe me now, but this is what I mean about trust. There will be pain, but nothing that you can't handle. I cannot emphasize this enough. Again, it comes down to trust. Do you trust me, Anna?
Yes, I do,
she says immediately. Her response knocks me sideways. It's completely unexpected. Again. Have I gained her trust already? Well then, the rest of this stuff is just details. I feel 10 feet tall.
Important details.
She's right. Concentrate, Gray. Okay, let's talk through those. The waiter re-enters with our entrees. I hope you like fish, I say, as he places our food before us. The black cod looks delicious. Anna takes a bite. Finally, she's eating. The rules, I continue. Let's talk about them. The food is a deal breaker?
Yes.
Can I modify to say that you will eat at least 3 meals a day?
No.
Suppressing an irritated sigh, I persist. I need to know that you're not hungry. She frowns.
You'll have to trust me.
Oh, touche, Miss Steele, I mutter to myself. These are battles I'm not going to win. I concede the food and the sleep. She gives me a small, relieved smile.
Why can't I look at you? She asks.
That's a Dom sub thing. You'll get used to it. She frowns once more, but looks pained this time.
Why can't I touch you?
She asks. Because you can't. Shut her down, Gray.
Is it because of Mrs. Robinson?
What? Why would you think that? You think she traumatized me? She nods. No, Anastasia, she's not the reason. Besides, Mrs. Robinson wouldn't take any of that shit from me.
So nothing to do with her?
She asks, looking confused.
No.
I can't bear to be touched, and baby, you really don't want to know why. And I don't want you touching yourself either, I add.
Out of curiosity, why?
Because I want all your pleasure. In fact, I want it now. I could fuck her here to see if she can be quiet. Real quiet, knowing we're within earshot of the hotel staff and guests. After all, that's why I've booked this room. She opens her mouth as if to say something, but closes it again and takes another bite of food from her largely untouched plate. I've given you a great deal to think about, haven't I? I say, folding up her email and tucking it into my inside pocket.
Yes.
Do you want to go through the soft limits now, too?
Not over dinner.
Squeamish?
Something like that.
You've not eaten very much.
I've had enough.
This is getting old. 3 oysters, 4 bites of cod, and 1 asparagus stalk. No potatoes, no nuts, no olives, and you've not eaten all day. You said I could trust you. Her eyes widen. Yeah, I've been keeping count, Anna.
Christian, please, it's not every day I sit through conversations like this.
I need you fit and healthy, Anastasia. My tone is adamant.
I know.
And right now I want to peel you out of that dress.
I don't think that's a good idea, she whispers. We haven't had dessert.
You want dessert? When you haven't eaten your main course?
Yes.
You could be dessert.
I'm not sure I'm sweet enough.
Anastasia, you're deliciously sweet. I know.
Christian, you use sex as a weapon. It really isn't fair.
She looks down at her lap, and her voice is low and a little melancholy. She looks up again, pinning me with an intense stare, her powder blue eyes unnerving and arousing. You're right, I do, I admit. In life, you use what you know. It doesn't change how much I want you. Here. Now. And we could fuck here. Right now. I know you're interested, Anna. I hear how your breathing has changed. I'd like to try something. I really want to know how quiet she can be, and if she can do this with the fear of discovery. Her brow creases once more. She's confused. If you were my sub, you wouldn't have to think about this. It would be easy. all those decisions, all the wearying thought processes behind them. The, is this the right thing to do? Should this happen here? Can it happen now? You wouldn't have to worry about any of that detail. That's what I'd do as your Dom. And right now, I know you want me, Anastasia. She tosses her hair over her shoulder, and her frown intensifies as she licks her lips. Oh yes, she wants me. I can tell because your body gives you away. You're pressing your thighs together, you're flushed, and your breathing has changed. How do you know about my thighs? She asks, her voice high-pitched, shocked, I think. I felt the tablecloth move, and it's a calculated guess based on years of experience. I'm right, aren't I? She's quiet for a moment and looks away. I haven't finished my cod, she says, evasive but still blushing. You'd prefer cold cod to me? Her eyes meet mine, and they're wide, pupils dark and large.
I thought you liked me to clear my plate.
Right now, Miss Steele, I couldn't give a fuck about your food.
Christian, you just don't fight fair.
I know. I never have. We stare at each other in a battle of wills, both aware of the sexual tension stretching between us across the table. Please, would you just do as you're told? I implore her with a look. But her eyes glint with sensual disobedience, and a smile lifts her lips. Still holding my stare, she picks up an asparagus spear and deliberately bites her lip. What is she doing? Very slowly, she places the tip of the spear in her mouth and sucks it. Fuck. She's trifling with me. A dangerous tactic that will have me fucking her over this table. Oh, bring it on, Miss Steele. I watch, mesmerized, hardening by the second. Anastasia, what are you doing? I warn.
Eating my asparagus?
She says with a coy smile. I think you're toying with me, Miss Steele.
I'm just finishing my food, Mr. Gray.
Her lips curl wider, slowly, carnal, and the heat between us rises several degrees. She really has no idea how sexy she is. I'm about to pounce when the waiter knocks and enters. Damn it. I let him clear the plates, then turn my attention back to Miss Steele. But her frown is back, and she's fidgeting with her fingers. Hell. Would you like some dessert? I ask.
No, thank you. I think I should go, she says, still staring at her hands.
Go? She's leaving? The waiter exits quickly with our plates.
Yes,
Anna says, her voice firm with resolve. She gets to her feet to leave, and automatically I stand, too.
We both have the graduation ceremony tomorrow, she says.
This is not going according to plan at all. I don't want you to go, I state, because it's the truth.
Please, I have to.
She insists. Why?
Because you've given me so much to consider, and I need some distance.
Her eyes are pleading with me to let her go. But we've gotten so far in our negotiation. We've made compromises. We can make this work. I have to make this work. I could make you stay, I tell her, knowing that I could seduce her right now in this room.
Yes, you could easily, but I don't want you to.
This is all going south. I've overplayed my hand. This isn't how I thought the night would end. I rake my hands through my hair in frustration. You know, when you fell into my office to interview me, you were all yes, sir, no, sir. I thought you were a natural-born submissive. But quite frankly, Anastasia, I'm not sure you have a submissive bone in your delectable body. I walk the few steps that separate us and look down into eyes that shine with determination.
You may be right, she says.
No. No. I don't want to be right. I want the chance to explore the possibility that you do. I caress her face and her lower lip with my thumb. I don't know any other way, Anastasia. This is who I am.
I know, she says.
Lowering my head so my lips hover over hers, I wait until she raises her mouth to mine and closes her eyes. I want to give her a brief, chaste kiss, but as our lips touch, she leans into me, her hands suddenly fisting in my hair, her mouth opening to me, her tongue insistent. I press my hand to the base of her spine, holding her against me, and deepen the kiss, mirroring her fervor. Christ, I want her. I can't persuade you to stay, I whisper against the corner of her mouth, as my body responds, hardening with desire.
No.
Spend the night with me.
And not touch you?
No. Damn. The darkness uncoils in my guts, but I ignore it. You impossible girl, I mutter, and pull back, examining her face and her tense, brooding expression. Why do I think you're telling me goodbye?
Because I'm leaving now.
That's not what I mean, and you know it.
Christian, I have to think about this. I don't know if I can have the kind of relationship you want.
I close my eyes and rest my forehead against hers. What did you expect, Gray? She's not cut out for this. I take a deep breath and kiss her forehead, then bury my nose in her hair, inhaling her sweet, autumnal scent and committing it to memory. That's it. Enough. Stepping back, I release her. As you wish, Miss Steele. I'll escort you to the lobby. I hold out my hand for what could be the last time, and I'm surprised how painful this thought is. She places her hand in mine, and in silence we head down to reception. Do you have your valet ticket? I ask as we reach the lobby. I sound calm and collected, but inside I'm in knots. From her purse she retrieves the ticket, which I hand to the doorman.
Thank you for dinner, she says.
It's a pleasure as always, Miss Steele. This cannot be the end. I have to show her, demonstrate what this all means, what we can do together. Show her what we can do in the playroom. Then she'll know. This might be the only way to save this deal. Quickly, I turn to her. You're moving this weekend to Seattle. If you make the right decision, can I see you on Sunday? I ask.
We'll see. Maybe, she says.
That's not a no. I notice the goosebumps on her arms. It's cooler now, don't you have a jacket? I ask.
No.
This woman needs looking after. I take off my jacket. Here, I don't want you catching cold. I slip it over her shoulders and she hugs it around herself, closes her eyes, and inhales deeply. Is she drawn to my scent, like I am to hers? Perhaps all is not lost? The valet pulls up in an ancient VW Beetle. What the hell is that? That's what you drive? This must be older than Grandpa Theodore. Jesus. The valet hands over the keys and I tip him generously. He deserves danger pay. Is this roadworthy? I glare at Anna. How can she be safe in this rust bucket?
Yes.
Will it make it to Seattle?
Yes, she will.
Safely?
Yes.
She tries to reassure me.
Okay, she's old, but she's mine, and she's roadworthy. My stepdad bought it for me.
When I suggest that we could do better than this, she realizes what I'm offering, and her expression changes immediately. She's mad.
You are not buying me a car, she says emphatically.
We'll see, I mutter, trying to keep calm. I hold open the driver's door, and as she climbs in, I wonder if I should ask Taylor to take her home. Damn. I remember that he's off this evening. Once I've shut the door, she rolls down the window, painfully slowly. For Christ's sake. Drive safely, I growl.
Goodbye, Christian,
she says, and her voice falters as if she's trying not to cry. Shit. My whole mood shifts from irritation and concern for her well-being to helplessness as her car roars off up the street. I don't know if I'll see her again. I stand like a fool on the sidewalk until her rear lights disappear into the night. Fuck. Why did that go so wrong? I stalk back into the hotel, make for the bar, and order a bottle of the Sancerre. Taking it with me, I head up to my room. My laptop lies open on my desk, and before I uncork the wine, I sit down and start typing an email. From Christian Gray. Subject, tonight. Date, May 25th, 2011, 10:01 p.m. To Anastasia Steele. I don't understand why you ran this evening. I sincerely hope I answered all your questions to your satisfaction. I know I have given you a great deal to contemplate, and I fervently hope that you will give my proposal your serious consideration. I really want to make this work. We will take it slow. Trust me. Christian Gray, CEO, Gray Enterprises Holdings, Incorporated. I glance at my watch. It will take her at least 20 minutes to get home, probably longer in that death trap. I email Taylor. From Christian Gray. Subject, Audi A3. Date, May 25th, 2011, 10:04 p.m. To J.B. Taylor. I need that Audi delivered here tomorrow. Thanks. Christian Gray, CEO, Gray Enterprises Holdings, Incorporated. Opening the Sancerre, I pour myself a glass, and picking up my book, I sit and read, trying hard to concentrate. My eyes keep straying to my laptop screen. When will she reply? As the minutes tick by, my anxiety balloons. Why hasn't she returned my email? At 11 o'clock, I text her. Are you home safe? But I get nothing in response. Perhaps she's gone straight to bed. Before midnight, I send another email. From Christian Gray. Subject, tonight. Date, May 25th, 2011, 11:58 p.m. To Anastasia Steele. I hope you made it home in that car of yours. Let me know if you're okay. Christian Gray, CEO, Gray Enterprises Holdings, Incorporated. I'll see her tomorrow at the graduation ceremony, and I'll find out then if she's turning me down. With that depressing thought, I strip and climb into bed and stare at the ceiling. You've really fucked up this deal, Gray. Thursday, May 26th, 2011.
Mommy is gone. Sometimes she goes outside, and it is only me. Me and my cars and my blankie. When she comes home, she sleeps on the couch. The couch is brown and sticky. She is tired. Sometimes I cover her with my blankie. Or she comes home with something to eat. I like those days. We have bread and butter, and sometimes we have macaroni and cheese. That is my favorite. Today, Mommy is gone. I play with my cars. They go fast on the floor. My mommy is gone. She will come back. She will. When is Mommy coming home? It is dark now, and my mommy is gone. I can reach the light when I stand on the stool. On, off, on, off, on, off. Light, dark, light, dark, light. I'm hungry. I ate the cheese. There is cheese in the fridge. Cheese with blue fur. When is Mommy coming home? Sometimes she comes home with him. I hate him. I hide when he comes. My favorite place is in my mommy's closet.
It smells of mommy. It smells of mommy when she's happy.
When is mommy coming home?
My bed is cold, and I am hungry. I have my blankie and my cars, but not my mommy. When is mommy coming home?
I wake with a start. Fuck. 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 I hate my dreams. They're riddled with harrowing memories, distorted reminders of a time I want to forget. My heart is pounding, and I'm drenched with sweat. But the worst consequence of these nightmares is dealing with the overwhelming anxiety when I wake. My nightmares have recently become more frequent and more vivid. I have no idea why. Damned Flynn. He's not back until sometime next week. I run both of my hands through my hair and check the time. It's 5:38, and the dawn light is seeping through the curtains. It's nearly time to get up. Go for a run, Gray. There is still no text or email from Anna. As my feet pound the sidewalk, my anxiety grows. Leave it, Gray. Just fucking leave it. I know I'll see her at the graduation ceremony, but I can't leave it. Before my shower, I send her another text. Call me. I just need to know she's safe. After breakfast, there's still no word from Anna. To get her out of my head, I work for a couple of hours on my commencement speech. At the graduation ceremony later this morning, I'll be honoring the extraordinary work of the Environmental Sciences Department and the progress they've made in partnership with GEH in arable technology for developing countries.
All part of your Feed the World plan?
Anna's shrewd words echo in my head, and they nudge at last night's nightmare. I shrug it off as I rewrite. Sam, my VP for publicity, has sent a draft that is way too pretentious for me. It takes me an hour to rework his media speak bullshit into something more human. 9:30, and still no word from Anna. Her radio silence is worrying, and frankly rude. I call, but her phone goes straight to a generic voicemail message. I hang up. Show some dignity, Gray. There's a ping in my inbox, and my heartbeat spikes. But it's from Mia. In spite of my bad mood, I smile. I've missed that kid. From Mia G., Chef Extraordinaire. Subject, flights. Date, May 26th, 2011. 6:32 p.m. To Christian Gray.
Hey, Christian. I can't wait to get out of here. Rescue me, please. My flight number on Saturday is AF3622. It arrives at 12:22 p.m., and Dad is making me fly coach. Pouting. I will have lots of luggage. Love, love, love Paris fashion. Mom says you have a girlfriend. Is this true? What's she like? I need to know. See you Saturday. Missed you so much. A bientôt, mon frère. MXXXXXXXXX.
Oh, hell. My mother's big mouth. Anna is not my girlfriend. And come Saturday, I'll have to fend off my sister's equally big mouth and her inherent optimism and her prying questions. She can be exhausting. Making a mental note of the flight number and time, I send Mia a quick email to let her know I'll be there. At 9:45, I get ready for the ceremony. Gray suit, white shirt, and of course, that tie. It will be my subtle message to Anna that I haven't given up, and a reminder of good times. Yeah, real good times. Images of her bound and wanting come to mind. Damn it. Why hasn't she called? I press redial. Shit. Still no fucking answer. At 10 o'clock precisely, there's a knock on my door. It's Taylor. Good morning, I say as he comes in.
Mr. Gray?
How was yesterday?
Good, sir.
Taylor's demeanor shifts, and his expression warms. He must be thinking of his daughter.
Sophie?
She's a doll, sir, and doing very well at school.
That's great to hear.
The A3 will be in Portland later this afternoon.
Excellent. Let's go.
And though I'm loath to admit it, I'm anxious to see Miss Steele. The Chancellor's secretary ushers me into a small room adjacent to the WSU auditorium. She blushes, almost as much as a certain young woman I know intimately. There, in the green room, academics, administrative staff, and a few students are having pre-graduation coffee. Among them, to my surprise, is Catherine Cavanaugh.
"Hi, Christian," she says, strutting toward me with the confidence of the well-heeled.
She's in her graduation gown and appears cheerful enough. Surely she's seen Anna.
"Hi, Catherine. How are you?"
"You seem baffled to see me here," she says, ignoring my greeting and sounding a little affronted. "I'm valedictorian. Didn't Elliot tell you?"
"No, he didn't. We're not in each other's pockets, for Christ's sake."
"Congratulations," I add as a courtesy.
"Thank you."
Her tone is clipped.
"Is Anna here?"
"Soon. She's coming with her dad."
"You saw her this morning?"
"Yes. Why?"
"I wanted to know if she made it home in that death trap she calls a car."
"Wanda. She calls it Wanda. And yes, she did."
She gazes at me with a quizzical expression.
"I'm glad to hear it."
At that point, the Chancellor joins us, and with a polite smile to Cavanaugh, escorts me over to meet the other academics. I'm relieved that Anna is in one piece, but pissed that she hasn't replied to any of my messages. It's not a good sign. But I don't have long to dwell on this discouraging state of affairs. One of the faculty members announces it's time to begin and herds us out into the corridor. In a moment of weakness, I try Anna's phone once more. It goes straight to voicemail, and I'm interrupted by Cavanaugh.
"I'm looking forward to your commencement address," she says as we walk down the hallway.
When we reach the auditorium, I notice it's larger than I expected, and packed. The audience, as one, rises and applauds as we file onto the stage. The clapping intensifies, then slowly subsides to an expectant buzz as everyone takes their seats. Once the Chancellor begins his welcome address, I'm able to scan the room. The front rows are filled with students, in identical black and red WSU robes.
Where is she?
Methodically, I inspect each row.
There you are.
I find her huddled in the second row. She's alive. I feel foolish for expending so much anxiety and energy on her whereabouts last night and this morning. Her brilliant blue eyes are wide as they lock with mine, and she shifts in her seat, a slow flush coloring her cheeks.
"Yes, I've found you, and you haven't replied to my messages." She's avoiding me, and I'm pissed. Really pissed.
Closing my eyes, I imagine dripping hot wax onto her breasts and her squirming beneath me. This has a radical effect on my body.
Shit. Get it together, Gray.
Dismissing her from my mind, I marshal my lascivious thoughts and concentrate on the speeches. Cavanaugh gives an inspiring address about embracing opportunities.
"Yes, carpe diem, Kate."
And gets a rousing reception when she's finished. She's obviously smart and popular and confident. Not the shy and retiring wallflower that is the lovely Miss Steele. It really amazes me that these two are friends. I hear my name announced. The Chancellor has introduced me. I rise and approach the lectern.
"Showtime, Gray."
I'm profoundly grateful and touched by the great compliment accorded to me by the authorities of WSU today. It offers me a rare opportunity to talk about the impressive work of the Environmental Sciences Department here at the university. Our aim is to develop viable and ecologically sustainable methods of farming for third world countries. Our ultimate goal is to help eradicate hunger and poverty across the globe. Over 1 billion people, mainly in sub-Saharan Africa, South Asia, and Latin America, live in abject poverty. Agricultural dysfunction is rife within these parts of the world, and the result is ecological and social destruction. I have known what it's like to be profoundly hungry. This is a very personal journey for me. As partners, WSU and GEH have made tremendous progress in soil fertility and arable technology. We are pioneering low-input systems in developing countries, and our test sites have increased crop yields up to 30% per hectare. WSU has been instrumental in this fantastic achievement, and GEH is proud of those students who join us through internships to work at our test sites in Africa. The work they do there benefits the local communities and the students themselves. Together we can fight hunger and the abject poverty that blights these regions. But in this age of technological evolution, as the first world races ahead, widening the gap between the haves and the have-nots, it's vital to remember that we must not squander the world's finite resources. These resources are for all humanity, and we need to harness them, find ways of renewing them, and develop new solutions to feed our overpopulated planet. As I've said, the work that GEH and WSU are doing together will provide solutions, and it's our job to get the message out there. It's through GEH's telecommunications division that we intend to supply information and education to the developing world. I'm proud to say that we're making impressive progress in solar technology, battery life, and wireless distribution that will bring the internet to the remotest parts of the world. And our goal is to make it free to users at the point of delivery. Access to education and information, which we take for granted here, is the crucial component for ending poverty in these developing regions. We're lucky. We are all privileged here, some more than others, and I include myself in that category. We have a moral obligation to offer those less fortunate a decent life that's healthy, secure, and well-nourished, with access to more of the resources that we all enjoy here. I'll leave you with a quote that has always resonated with me, and I'm paraphrasing a Native American saying, "Only when the last leaf has fallen, the last tree has died, and the last fish been caught, will we realize that we cannot eat money." As I sit down to rousing applause, I resist looking at Anna and examine the WSU banner hanging at the back of the auditorium. If she wants to ignore me, fine. Two can play at that game. The Vice Chancellor rises to commence handing out the degrees, and so begins the agonizing wait until we reach the S's and I can see her again. After an eternity, I hear her name called. "Anastasia Steele?" A ripple of applause, and she's walking toward me, looking pensive and worried. Shit. What is she thinking? "Hold it together, Gray." "Congratulations, Miss Steele," I say as I give Anna her degree. We shake hands, but I don't let hers go. "Do you have a problem with your laptop?" She looks perplexed. "No." "Then you are ignoring my emails," I release her. "I only saw the mergers and acquisitions one." "What the hell does that mean?" Her frown deepens, but I have to let her go. There's a line forming behind her. "Later." I let her know that we're not finished with this conversation as she moves on. I'm in purgatory by the time we've reached the end of the line. I've been ogled and had eyelashes batted at me, silly giggling girls squeezing my hand, and 5 notes with phone numbers pressed into my palm. I'm relieved as I exit the stage along with the faculty, to the strains of some dreary processional music and applause. In the corridor, I grab Kavanaugh's arm. "I need to speak to Anna. Can you find her? Now." Kavanaugh is taken aback, but before she can say anything, I add, in as polite a tone as I can manage, "Please." Her lips thin with disapproval, but she waits with me as the academics file past, and then she returns to the auditorium. The chancellor stops to congratulate me on my speech. "It was an honor to be asked," I respond, shaking his hand once again. Out of the corner of my eye, I spy Kate in the corridor, with Anna at her side. Excusing myself, I stride toward Anna. "Thank you," I say to Kate, who gives Anna a worried glance. Ignoring her, I take Anna's elbow and lead her through the first door I find. It's a men's locker room, and from the fresh smell I can tell it's empty. Locking the door, I turn to face Miss Steele. "Why haven't you emailed me or texted me back?" I demand. She blinks a couple of times, consternation writ large on her face.
"I haven't looked at my computer today or my phone."
She seems genuinely bewildered by my outburst.
"That was a great speech," she adds.
"Thank you," I mutter, derailed. How can she not have checked her phone or email?
"Explains your food issues to me," she says, her tone gentle, and if I'm not mistaken, pitying, too.
"Anastasia, I don't want to go there at the moment." "I don't need your pity." I close my eyes. All this time I thought she didn't want to talk to me.
"I've been worried about you."
"Worried? Why?"
"Because you went home in that death trap you call a car.
And I thought I'd blown the deal between us." Anna bristles.
"What? It's not a death trap. It's fine. Jose regularly services it for me."
"Jose, the photographer?" This just gets better and fucking better.
"Yes, the Beetle used to belong to his mother."
"Yes, and probably her mother and her mother before her. It's not safe." I'm almost shouting.
"I've been driving it for over 3 years. I'm sorry you were worried. Why didn't you call?"
I called her cell phone. Does she not use her damned cell phone? Is she talking about the house phone? Running my hand through my hair in exasperation, I take a deep breath. This is not addressing the fucking elephant in the room. "Anastasia, I need an answer from you. This waiting around is driving me crazy." Her face falls. "Shit.
Christian, I... Look, I've left my stepdad on his own.
Tomorrow. I want an answer by tomorrow."
"Okay. Tomorrow I'll tell you then," she says with an anxious look.
Well, it's still not a no, and once more I'm surprised by my relief. What the hell is it about this woman? She stares up at me with sincere blue eyes, her face etched in concern, and I resist the urge to touch her. "Are you staying for drinks?" I ask.
"I don't know what Ray wants to do." She looks uncertain.
"Your stepfather? I'd like to meet him." Her uncertainty magnifies.
"I'm not sure that's a good idea," she says darkly as I unlock the door.
"What? Why? Is this because she now knows I was dirt poor as a kid? Or because she knows how I like to fuck? That I'm a freak? Are you ashamed of me?"
"No,"
she exclaims, and she rolls her eyes in frustration.
"Introduce you to my dad as what?"
She raises her hands in exasperation.
"This is the man who deflowered me and wants us to start a BDSM relationship? You're not wearing running shoes."
"Running shoes?" Her dad is going to come after me? And just like that, she has injected a little humor between us. My mouth twitches in response and she returns my smile, her face lighting up like a summer dawn. "Just so you know, I can run quite fast," I respond playfully.
"Just tell him I'm your friend, Anastasia."
I open the door and follow her out, but stop when I reach the Chancellor and his colleagues. As one, they turn and stare at Miss Steele, but she's disappearing into the auditorium. They turn back to me. "Miss Steele and I are none of your business, people." I give the Chancellor a brief, polite nod, and he asks if I'll come and meet more of his colleagues and enjoy some canapés.
"Sure,"
I reply. It takes me 30 minutes to escape from the faculty gathering, and as I make my way out of the crowded reception, Kavanaugh falls into step beside me. We head to the lawn where the graduates and their families are enjoying a post-graduation drink in a large tented pavilion.
"So have you asked Anna to dinner on Sunday?"
she asks.
"Sunday? Has Anna mentioned that we're seeing each other on Sunday?"
"At your parents' house," Kavanaugh explains. My parents? I spot Anna. What the fuck? A tall blonde guy who looks as if he's walked off a beach in California has his hands all over her. Who the hell is that? Is this why she didn't want me to come for a drink? Anna looks up, catches my expression, and pales as her roommate stands beside that guy. Hello, Ray, Kavanaugh says, and she kisses a middle-aged man in an ill-fitting suit standing beside Anna. This must be Raymond Steele.
Have you met Anna's boyfriend?
Kavanaugh asks him.
Christian Gray.
Boyfriend. Mr. Steele, it's a pleasure to meet you. Mr. Gray, he says, quietly surprised. We shake hands. His grip is firm, and his fingers and palm are rough to the touch. This man works with his hands. Then I remember he's a carpenter. His dark brown eyes give nothing away.
And this is my brother, Ethan Kavanaugh, says Kate,
introducing the beach bum who has his arm wrapped around Anna. Ah, the Kavanaugh offspring together. I mutter his name as we shake hands, noting that they are soft, unlike Ray Steele's. Now stop pawing my girl, you fucker. Anna, baby, I whisper, holding out my hand, and like the good woman she is, she steps into my embrace. She's discarded her graduation robe and wears a pale gray halter neck dress, exposing her flawless shoulders and back. Two dresses in 2 days. She's spoiling me.
Ethan, Mom and Dad wanted a word.
Kavanaugh hauls her brother away, leaving me with Anna and her father. So how long have you kids known each other? Mr. Steele asks. As I reach across to grasp Anna's shoulder, I gently trace my thumb across her naked back, and she trembles in response. I tell him we've known each other for a couple of weeks. We met when Anastasia came to interview me for the student newspaper. Didn't know you worked on the student newspaper, Anna, Mr. Steele says.
Kate was ill, she says.
Ray Steele eyes his daughter and frowns. Fine speech you gave, Mr. Gray, he says. Thank you, sir. I understand that you're a keen fisherman. Indeed I am. Annie tell you that?
She did.
You fish? There's a spark of curiosity in his brown eyes. Not as much as I'd like to. My dad used to take my brother and me when we were kids. For him, it was all about the steelheads. Guess I caught the bug from him. Anna listens for a moment, then excuses herself and moves off through the crowd to join the Kavanaugh clan. Damn, she looks sensational in that dress.
Oh, where'd you fish?
Ray Steele's question pulls me back into the conversation. I know it's a test. All over the Pacific Northwest.
You grew up in Washington?
Yes, sir. My dad started us on the Wainuchi River. A smile tugs at Steele's mouth. Know it well. But his favorite is the Skagit, the U.S. side. He'd get us out of bed at some ungodly hour of the morning and we'd drive up there. He's got some mighty fine fish in that river. That's some sweet water. Caught me some rod breakers in the Skagit. On the Canadian side, mind. It's one of the best stretches for wild steelheads. Give you a much better chase than those that are clipped, I say, my eyes on Anna. Couldn't agree more. My brother's caught a couple of wild monsters. Me, I'm still waiting for the big one. One day, huh? I hope so. Anna is deep in a passionate discussion with Kavanaugh. What are those two women talking about? You still get out much to fish? I refocus on Mr. Steele.
Sure do. Annie's friend Jose, his father, and I sneak out as often as we can.
The fucking photographer? Again? He's the guy that looks after the Beetle?
Yeah, that's him.
Great car, the Beetle. I'm a fan of German-made cars.
Yeah?
Annie loves that old car, but I guess it's getting past its sell-by date. Funny you should mention that. I was thinking of loaning her one of my company cars. Do you think she'd go for it?
I guess. That would be up to Annie, mind.
Great.
I take it Anna's not into fishing. No. That girl takes after her mother. She couldn't stomach seeing the fish suffer. Or the worms, for that matter. She's a gentle soul. He gives me a pointed look. Oh. A warning from Raymond Steele. I turn it into a joke. No wonder she wasn't keen on the cod we ate the other day. Steele chuckles. She's fine with eating them. Anna has finished talking to the Kavanaughs and is heading our way.
Hi,
she says, beaming at us. Annie, where are the restrooms? Steele asks. She directs him to go outside the pavilion and to the left. See you in a moment. You kids enjoy yourselves, he says. She watches him go, then peers nervously up at me. But before she or I can say anything, we're interrupted by a photographer. She snaps a quick still of us together before hurrying away.
So you've charmed my father as well?
Anna says, her voice sweet and teasing. As well? Have I charmed you, Miss Steele? With my fingers, I trace the rosy flush that appears on her cheek. Oh, I wish I knew what you were thinking, Anastasia. When my fingers reach her chin, I tilt her head back so I can scrutinize her expression. She stills and stares back at me, her pupils darkening.
Right now, she whispers, I'm thinking, nice tie.
I was expecting some kind of declaration. Her response makes me laugh. It's recently become my favorite. She smiles. You look lovely, Anastasia. This halter neck dress suits you, and I get to stroke your back, feel your beautiful skin. Her lips part and her breath hitches, and I can feel the pull of the attraction between us. You know it's going to be good, don't you, baby? My voice is low, betraying my longing. She closes her eyes, swallows, and takes a deep breath. When she opens them again, she's radiating anxiety.
But I want more, she says.
More? Fuck, what is this? She nods.
More?
I whisper again. Her lip is pliant beneath my thumb. You want hearts and flowers. Fuck. It will never work with her. How can it? I don't do romance. My hopes and dreams begin to crumble between us. Her eyes are wide, innocent, and beseeching. Damn. She's so beguiling. Anastasia, it's not something I know.
Me neither.
Of course. She's never had a relationship before. You don't know much.
You know all the wrong things,
she breathes. Wrong? Not to me. Try it, I plead. Please, try it my way. Her gaze is intense as she searches my face, looking for clues, and for a moment I'm lost in blue eyes that see everything.
Okay,
she whispers.
What?
Every hair on my body stands to attention.
Okay, I'll try.
You're agreeing? I don't believe it.
Subject to the soft limits, yes. I'll try.
Sweet Lord. I pull her into my arms and wrap her in my embrace, burying my face in her hair, inhaling her seductive scent. And I don't care that we're in a crowded space. It's just her and me.
Jesus, Anna, you're so unexpected. You take my breath away.
A moment later, I'm aware that Raymond Steele has returned and is examining his watch to cover his embarrassment. Reluctantly, I release her. I'm on top of the world.
Deal done, Gray. Annie, should we get some lunch? Steele asks.
Okay,
she says with a shy smile directed at me.
Would you like to join us, Christian?
For a moment, I'm tempted, but Anna's anxious glance in my direction says, please, no. She wants alone time with her dad. I get it.
Thank you, Mr. Steele, but I have plans. It's been great to meet you, sir.